Oh yeah, yeah. It's, well, it's kind of thinking something, and then you can tell how many people are on. Yeah, yeah, I knew that part. Yeah.
So it seems like there are two people.
Okay.
One signing, one to live chat for the session.
So we got back. We got our live streaming back then.
Yeah, it's back up.
Shall we start?
Yep.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, good afternoon, everybody. How are you all doing?
Good.
Okay. So it's the last session of the day, and I hope that you have still enough coffee and some brain cells left for this very important topic we're going to be having today. So my name is Sherman Lau, and I was introduced this morning. I work at MBBS Canada in the role of student enrollment together with Lisa Polke. I'm also a graduate of MBBS ACTS and currently working on my doctoral ministry here with a dissertation topic in the area of multicultural churches in Canada. I also teach here. And one of the courses I teach is leadership in the multicultural context. Prior to coming to the seminary, I was pastor of two churches, a church in Vancouver, an ethnic Chinese church, and then a multicultural church here in Abbotsford, and where I oversaw the small groups there. And I still attend, actually, the church, the Life Center, is still where me and my family still attend. The reason I share all that background information with you this afternoon is because the topic that I've been given, developing healthy multicultural small groups, or as listed, bridging cultures in your small group, I discovered that this is actually very new ground. There's the slide later on where I'll be referring to some books, and I was saying to my fellow colleagues and to Dr. Wolf, you think you'd be able to find a book on leading multicultural small groups in this day and age. Unfortunately, there are no books written on this topic. The best you're going to get is a chapter in a multi-ethnic ministry type book. That's pretty much all we're going to get. So what I'm going to do for you this afternoon, I'm going to share with you some of the academic background and research, and then I'm going to transition to actually sharing with you through my church how we develop multicultural small groups. And so you'll get the academic side as well as a real life case study for you to take, learn from what we've done, the mistakes we've made, as well as some of the things that we did well. And hopefully that's something you'll be able to take with you back to your churches and the ministries that you serve. So the first thing I'm going to do for you, would like you to do this morning, and again, sorry, welcome to our live streamers as well. The first thing I'm going to ask us to do, when you receive the handouts, you have an exercise in front of you called the Circle of Friendship exercise. For those on the live streaming, you can download the form there. And I would like us to take a few minutes and just write down, identify six of your closest friends. And it says here, identify their ethnicity, their social class, and or beliefs, if you know what they are. And then if you're able, also write down how you met these six friends of yours. Okay? So just take a few minutes. We're going to try and get through six, but if you can't get through six, that's okay. You know, try and get at least three, okay? And then we're going to have a brief discussion there. Okay, chances are you probably didn't get through all six, right?
Yes.
You did? Oh, wow. Okay, awesome. So what we're going to do, I want to just give you a moment to just share with the group here, if you're comfortable, what do you see in this exercise here? Are there any reflections or some insights you're seeing from what you discovered about your circle of friends?
They're all very homogeneous.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else?
Since I'm Korean, I have two Korean friends that I can identify, and one Persian, and one Filipino, one Irish, one Canadian.
Okay, very good.
From Catholic to Atheist, and ex-Catholic converted to Protestant and some Protestant.
Thank you. Anybody else want to share? The reason I share this, I start usually these workshops with this exercise, first of all, I'm not here to, make anybody feel bad or anything if you have a group of friends that happen to be homogeneous, okay? That's not the point of this exercise. It's really for us to kind of just have a realization of, if we're going to seek to want to become, seek to want to develop healthy multicultural churches or multicultural small groups, we need to ask ourselves, well, do our closest friendships, relationships, do they reflect this desire of our heart? Because if it doesn't, then we have to ask ourselves, how much do we really want to be involved in this type of ministry? How about this question? How did you guys meet? Did anybody want to share how you met your friends?
Co-workers,
okay.
Neighbors,
awesome, okay, good. So again, somehow at some point, I'll just use Ike, because I know Ike, at some point, Ike decided, I'm gonna be friends with my neighbor. And so in a way, this is kind of the similar idea. If we're gonna be going into multicultural small groups, it starts with this idea of this willingness, this desire, to want to actually get to know people of a different ethnic group. And I want to be clear this morning, or this afternoon, when I talk about this topic of developing healthy multicultural small groups, I want to be clear that what we're talking about today is ethnic culture. And we're going to be explaining a few of the other things as well, because it helps us to understand that this big word culture is more than just is used in many different ways to describe many different things about how we view our world and the people groups. So some of the books that I'm going to recommend that I encourage you to get on your own and read more. So the primary text that I use in my course and where most of the academic information is going to come from is from this book. It's called Cultural Intelligence, Improving Your CQ to Engage a Multicultural World. The author essentially puts the argument that, we are very knowledgeable about the idea of IQ, which is your intelligence quotient. We know about this latest development of EQ, which is emotional quotient. And so then he's saying one of the pieces that he thinks is missing in our 21st century relationships is this idea of CQ, which is cultural quotient. And his argument is that a lot of businesses and government agencies understand the value in understanding culture, especially in this global economy and global politics that we're involved in. But he feels that churches and faith communities are lagging behind in understanding their cultural quotient or expanding their cultural intelligence. And so, he wrote this book and has a whole ministry devoted to this that just really challenges Christian faith communities to think about, what are we doing in terms of our cultural intelligence. The other books I also recommend are Mark Law Branson, Juan Martinez's Churches, Cultures, and Leadership, and Su Chang Ra, who wrote Many Colors. And again, these are different authors that have really expressed or researched this idea of multiculturalism and how that impacts our faith communities and how we can transition or move our faith communities currently towards this more embracing idea of multicultural churches. But before we can even do that, I think, as in relation to our text here, we need to define this idea of culture. Now, going back to the small groups, I want to state that all that you've learned this weekend, is really great stuff. And can actually be applied to multicultural small groups. The small group principles you've heard all weekend also do work within a multi-ethnic, multicultural small group setting. But the main difference is this key idea that developing healthy multicultural small groups begins with leaders who are multicultural people. And later on, we'll explore what does that mean to be multicultural people. You know, it's not as simple as, you know, we think about multicultural small groups, it's not as simple as, you know, basically, you know, going to church, grabbing all the different national groups together, like pull them all together and say, we're going to form a small group and there you go. It's not like that. It's not that simple. It really does begin with a strong leadership at the church level among your elders, your pastors. It also, as I'll go into it later, it also has to permeate the DNA of your church community as well, this embracing of this idea of multiculturalism. All right. So one of the things we want to define first and foremost is this idea of culture. We use this word so widely to describe so many different things, from ethnicity to food to movies to beliefs, values, whatever, what have you. So there's so many. I think we it's such a overused word to describe people groups, you know, and customs, and on it goes. So I wanted to help us to define that first before we move forward. So the idea of culture. A theologian by the name of Richard Niebuhr wrote a book called Church and Culture, I believe, in like the 50s and 60s. And here's what he defines culture as. Culture is the artificial, secondary environment superimposed on the natural. So in his mind, essentially, that culture is something that's separate from our reality. There's the world that we see around us, and then there's the culture that we create in our minds or within our groups, and we put that over what we know is to be real, and that's what then defines what culture is. There you go. Klockholm and Kroeber are psychologists, and they define culture as a pattern of thinking, feeling, and reacting to various situations and actions. So this hits closer to this idea that culture is it's a pool of beliefs that have evolved over time, values that have evolved over time. And it's because something happened, and then, you know, that's it's a reaction. For example, okay, I'll use one. I'll just speak to my Chinese ethnicity and my Chinese culture. For example, when my daughter was born, one of the Chinese practices that we have is that the child does not leave the home for a month. Like, how many of you heard this? No? Nobody's heard of this? Okay. It's called, I forgot what the actual term is. But at the end of the month, you celebrate it. It's called Moon Yit. Correct? Is that right? Yeah. And basically, the child stays home for a month, the mother stays home for a month, and the idea is that the child is to, stay healthy and all that. And if she or she makes it to a month, then it's woohoo! It's celebration time. Now, this is a custom that's just kept going for generations. But if you truly understand where the beginning of it was, you have to understand that child mortality rate in ancient China was pretty bad. Diseases and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, this came about, this practice of, let's keep the mom home, let's keep the baby home. And then if they survive, then we celebrate. But you see, this is kind of those kind of cultural beliefs that, you know, there's a whole spiritual side of it as well, about how, you know, you don't want to let the evil spirits, but all of, anyways, that's other stuff. Okay, Becker. Becker is an anthropologist. Culture is the shared understandings people use within a society to align their actions. All right, when we use the word culture, we come to understand that culture can be a system of beliefs or ways of doing things that a people group can come together and develop. For example, I work at Axe. Axe has an Axe culture. You work in different workplaces. Do you all have a work culture? Yeah? Your family culture, you know, aside from your ethnicity, how your family did things, that's a family culture, right? Set of beliefs that have been passed on from generation to generation. And that's what this guy Becker is basically saying, is a shared understanding of a people group to basically to make things happen. Su Cheng Ra, in Many Colors, gives us a more updated idea to this definition of culture. It is a human attempt to understand the world around us. It is the programming that shapes who we are and who we are becoming. It is a social system that is shaped by the individual and that also has the capacity to shape the individual. But it's also the presence of God, the image of God, the mission of God found in the human spirit, soul, and social system. A lot of what he talks about here, we've touched on this weekend. You know, we talk about groups that shape us as we shape groups. We talk about the individuals in the group, but individuals in the group form that small group. We talk about the Imago Dei. We talk about the Missio Dei, image of God, the mission of God. And so, essentially, in Ra's mind, culture is both a human construct, something that we do develop, but it's also something that's God ordained as well. And I want us to be clear about that, because we have in our Christian evangelical minds, we seem to have this belief that we have a Christ against culture, and we need to come back to an understanding that culture actually is good. Culture is something God created. Culture is part of who we are, whether we like it or not. So then, Livermore gives us this understanding. Culture represents the way a group of people organize their ideas and hence their lives through cultural artifacts, cultural values, and cultural assumptions. And I think I like that one the best, because it's something that I think resonates with me. I've come to my own conclusion of what culture is. And in my mind, culture is a set of beliefs and values that have been shaped due to our upbringing, or set of assumptions that we've developed, and they become personal truths over time. That's how I've learned to define culture. So the you know, we're all familiar with the iceberg. You know, we talk about how, you know, there's the tip of the iceberg, and so when sometimes, like I said, when we think about culture, maybe for some of us we think culture is just food and movies, and so that's the tip of the culture, tip of the iceberg. But really, I mean, culture can be religious beliefs, can be ethnicity, it can be customs, it can be societal values, and that these are the things we don't see because they're submerged below the surface. And so every one of us here has a definition of culture, and I would encourage you to go home and think about that. How did you arrive at that understanding and that definition of culture? Is it just a way of doing things? Is it a set of beliefs, a set of values that you grew up with, that you were told? Were there a set of assumptions that you develop as you try to make sense of your world, and that's what culture means? So it's a very individual thing that, you know, we all have to wrestle with, especially when we start to talk about this idea of multiculturalism and multicultural small groups. Now, in your handouts there, I have an article at the back. And it's called Multiculturalism in Canada and the United States, Immigration Patterns and Observations for Multi-Ethnic Congregations. And for those on the live streaming, you have these handouts available to you as well. The reason I share these with you is because this was a focus group that was brought together here at ACTS by the different multicultural congregations that we have in the Lower Mainland. And just to kind of get an idea of where we're at and what we're thinking about this whole idea of multicultural churches. And I start with this idea because, you know, multicultural small groups, I suspect, like what we're here for, you know, reflect our multicultural churches, right? You know, so that's kind of where this is coming from. But here are some of the realities that was discovered or revealed. On page one, for example, it says by 2030, 55% of Canadian population will be born in Asia. 30% will be a visible multicultural minority, and this percentage will be over 50% in urban areas and even over 60% in Toronto. Over 6 million Canadians will identify with religions other than Christianity, and about half of these will be Muslims. Moving on to the next point here, as of the 2006 Canadian census, over 6 million foreign-born in Canada represent virtually 1 in 5 of the total population. So 1 in 5 people are basically foreign-born. Looking around this room right now, how many people here were not born in Canada? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We're disproportionate right now. Okay, so this is some of our realities. Next page. Let's talk about education. Immigrants today coming to North America are not the immigrants of the 1850s to the 1900s, in particular to Canada. So these aren't just your labor workers. Education of immigrants today, almost 55% have a university education compared to 22% of Canadian citizens. Did you catch that? That means your immigrant population is coming here more educated than the local born Canadians. The reasons for admission to country of Canada, 55% for economic or job prospects, 28% family ties and sponsorship, 20% are refugees. I admit for myself, I immigrated to Canada to attend university here at Trinity Western. Anybody want to share, you know, for those of us who've immigrated here, why did you immigrate here? Anybody? No? Too shy? Okay, does the sentence reflect your experience? Sponsored, yeah.
I'm working for second.
Yeah. Good, thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Education of immigrants. What's the difference among the U.S. immigrants? Immigration policy? Where only 16% of immigrants have university education.
Oh, I will show that to you in another slide. So hold that thought. Okay. I want to move on to pages 4 through 7. And these are some of the, some of the ideas, some of the brainstorming that came out from this conference that we had. And there are a few things here that kind of really resonated in thinking about this whole idea of multicultural small groups. Look at point two. We concluded that while many churches have multiple nationalities, they are not intentionally multicultural. We distinguish between multicolored congregations and multicultural congregations. These latter ones discern the difference between assimilation and complete integration. And the point there being is that what we may consider some churches to be multicultural because they have many they have a diversity of ethnic groups, may not really, in effect, really be representing a multicultural church, but rather a multicolored church, in that there's many different colored faces in the group. and it brings to this idea, or challenges to think about the idea of assimilation, accommodation, and integration. And my own thinking and talking with others, it seems that we are more in Canada, we are more into the accommodation of other ethnic groups as opposed to assimilation or integration. And this isn't just to in reflection to perhaps what we would consider a Caucasian homogenic church. It also does reflect other ethnic Chinese, other ethnic churches as well, whether they be Chinese, Korean, Arabic, Filipino. It's not just a white church problem. That's what I'm trying to say. The other part here that I wanted to also address this idea here of cultural identity. Yes. Number 11. How multicultural congregations cannot preserve a pure expression for each cultural identity, but rather involves deliberate transformation. New ways of doing things, the influence of others, and the use of intercultural dialogue forms that shape those involved in the process, hoping towards a more Christ-like expression of faith. In order to create a multicultural local church, give and take remain necessary. One of the views here is that in order to become a multicultural church environment, you know, there's a bit of a give and take. And one of the things I wanted to, I challenge this idea because I'm wondering if it's not so much about give and take, but it's more about celebration and honoring. I think sometimes there's a resistance to this because this idea that we're going to lose something on either part, either group. And this idea of losing and winning, I think is a tension. And so if we were to change not just our mindset, but our language, it's not so much about winning and losing, but more about transforming and integrating and celebrating and honoring. I think that will go a long way in developing multicultural communities. There's lots here, but those are the kind of the two points that really kind of stood with me. I wanted to show you some other documents that you can actually download. I wanted to show this to you. You can find them online. And the first one is the Global Religious Landscape, Pew Research Center, December 2012. Faith on the Move, again, by the Pew Research Center, March 2012. And Immigration and Ethnocultural Society in Canada, developed by StatsCan, November 2011. These are a more updated ethnocultural and immigration trends that are happening. But in particular, this slide I'm showing you here comes from the article Global Religion, and essentially shows you where in the world where we have the majority religion by country. And as you will see, any country that's basically red or pinkish salmon, whatever you want to call it, that's where the majority of the Christians are. The next slide I want to show you is the slide that says Faith on the Move. And this shows you basically where the different religious groups, where they're moving to. And as you can tell, a good chunk of the Christians are all moving to North America. The question back to you, sir, about the education. One of the interesting things here is that this is a slide where it shows where the migrants have come from. So it breaks down exactly how does I explain this? Okay, if this was the map of the world right now, this will show you the proportion from which those people are leaving the country. Do you get what I'm saying here? Okay, and then the next one is the proportion of the world where they're going. And so as a result, you can see the United States takes a big, huge chunk of the people who immigrate to the States, but they're all coming from places like Mexico and India and, you know, China. And so as a result, going back to your question there, one of the top countries going to the States is Mexico, and they don't have a very high, as high an education level as the other countries do. Awesome documents to download and read. These things are like 60 pages long. So lots of research there.
So where is this?
It's the Pew Foundation, Pew Research Center, and you can actually download these documents for free. They're really, really good documents. This one is produced by Canada, and again, it shows just again what some of the realities we're facing. Here we have visible minority. Actually, I'll start with ethnic ancestry. It says here more than 200 ethnic origins were reported. 13 different ethnic origins have surpassed the 1 million mark. Nearly 6 million plus people identify themselves as a member of a visible minority group. 30% were born in Canada, 65% were born in a country outside. The three largest minority groups, South Asians, Chinese, and Blacks, followed by Filipinos, Latin Americans, Arabs, Southeast Asians, West Asians, Koreans, and Japanese. So there's a lot of immigration that's happening around the world. There's a lot of faith movement. One of the images I didn't get a chance to show you is that a lot of the world is basically Christians are on the move around the world, and they're coming to North America. So what does this mean for you and me? Like, it's all fine and good that we have all these immigration trends and we have opportunities to basically minister to the world. We have lots of Christians from other countries coming here. Woohoo! It's going to be awesome, right? What does this mean for you and me? So, if we are wanting to become or trying to develop healthy multicultural small groups, I think there are really four main ideas that I think will complement everything that you've learned this weekend. The first one is very simply this big one. Embrace God's hearts for the nations. If you were to read these texts, you will discover that God has a heart for the nations. I can give you a quick rundown of each verse here. We look at Ruth, and we get this idea that, you know, Gentiles are welcome into the people of God. We look at Isaiah chapter 55 verse 5 and Isaiah 56, and we hear the prophet talk about the salvation of the nations. And then, you know, going and worshiping under one house. Matthew chapter 28, go forth and make disciples of all nations. We look at Acts chapter 10. We talk about Peter's revelation Peter's revelation of what is clean and what's unclean. Do not make unclean what I have deemed clean. We look at Galatians. There's neither Jew nor Greek, as a child of God, all the same. Ephesians, we're no longer foreigners and aliens to God and to one another. Again, Ephesians chapter 4, we are all under one Lord, one faith, one baptism. Under Colossians, again, neither Greek nor Jew. And in the Revelation text, we talk about every tribe and nation and the great multitude gathering together to worship God. I think there's enough biblical evidence to show that, God had a desire for the heart of the, has a heart for the nations. And I think as Christians here, we have an opportunity today to be able to embrace our our ethnic brothers and sisters, you know, our Christian ethnic brothers and sisters, as well as non-believers who are coming here to North America. You know, we don't have to be missionaries overseas. The world is coming here, and we can be missionaries in our backyard. So, again, I'm going to recommend you pick up this book, Grow Your Cultural Intelligence, as we're going to just breeze through some of the main ideas here. So the second thing for growing healthy multicultural small groups is to grow your cultural intelligence. And this is where I think Livermore just hits it on the nail. Our goal is not simply to learn more about different cultures, nor is it just to become better at navigating cultural differences. We must actually become multicultural people so that we might better express love cross-culturally. That is the whole point. You know, we're not talking about political correctness. We're not talking about making sure you know how to use chopsticks and knowing what to do when you present it with a food item that you're not really sure about, or customs that you don't want to offend. That's not the point. We do these things. We choose to become multicultural people because God's multicultural. God wants us to be multicultural so we can love each other cross-culturally. Did you guys ever hear about this thing, about the guidelines for Gatineau immigrants that raise eyebrows? Did you ever hear that news story? You guys know what I'm talking about? No? Gatineau is a city in Quebec, and this happened a couple of years ago. And basically, they were seeing that there was a lot of immigrants coming to the city of Gatineau. And some of these immigrants came from the South Asian community. And the neighbors were complaining about their customs and their food. So much so that the city of Gatineau produced this welcome package that essentially was presented to all these immigrants, and it basically said things like, you know, when you're cooking, we don't like smelly foods. Please don't, you know. It just has a list of different, very stereotypical, offensive things of not to do if you're going to live in Gatineau. I think the person who wrote that probably didn't really think about their cultural intelligence very much that day. But in that sense, I mean, here, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, we can allow our stereotypes or the things we hear about other groups, and we make assumptions about them, and then we try to correct. But really, this doesn't go anywhere in trying to help us to bridge cultures. It doesn't do anything. So, in short, here are the main principles behind growing your cultural intelligence. The first one is knowing your knowledge, CQ, which is understanding cross-cultural issues and differences, socio-economic, socio-ethnic, organizational, generational, language values. Essentially, this is to most of us here, we're probably really good at knowledge, CQ, and especially in this day and age of information at our fingertips, it's very easy to find out about different countries, different people groups, different ethnic foods. Very easy to do that. The other one is interpretive CQ, the degree to which we're mindful and aware when we interact cross-culturally, awareness and empathy, bounded and centered sets, category, width. These sound like very technical terms, but essentially what we're talking about is not only are you now knowledgeable about the different cultural groups that you're going to interact with, you're actually taking the point to actually ask the question of why do you do these things? Help me understand this particular food item. Help me understand why you go to the temple and you place incense before the idols. Or, as I go back to my early example, you know, why is it that when a child is born in a Chinese family, the child doesn't leave the home for a month? So that's, this is the kind of the interpretive CQ stuff that you're going into more than just observation. You're actually starting to ask the questions. Why do you do what you do? Perseverance CQ. Our level of interest, drive, and motivation to adapt cross-culturally. And this really is an honest, reflective question for you. Because this is where most people struggle with. It's fine and all good that we can learn about the book, about the world. We can buy travel books. We can go and surf the web and read National Geographic magazines. And then we go and we hang out with our friends and we ask them why we do what we do. But here's the question, you know, as you seek to become a multicultural person, how flexible are you on some of their beliefs and values? You know, when they ask you, let's say, you know, like for example, you go into someone's home, and in some homes, you know, you can just go right up into the kitchen and just grab a cup of water, right? In some homes, you're like, you have to ask the host, you know, would you mind having a cup of water? Like, so how much are you willing to persevere? How much are you willing to make the change in your life as you engage with other cultures? I know an Arabic culture, for example, when you go to an Arabic home, don't be surprised that it's going to be very hospitable. But not only that, the first thing that will serve you is really, really, really sweet tea. And really, 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 really sweet desserts. That's just how it is. You're smiling. You know what I'm talking about. And that's all fine and good when it's at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's tea time. It's okay. Or right after dinner. But when it's 9 o'clock in the morning, how do you do this? How do you say, well, I don't normally eat sweets at 9 in the morning, but hey, I'm actually going to do this because I don't want to offend you, but I really want to become your friend. So I am going to drink this really, really sweet tea and eat this really, really sweet dessert at 9 in the morning. You know, things like that. Behavioral CQ, the extent to which we appropriately change our verbal and non-verbal actions when we interact cross-culturally. And again, this is where it's not something I think we can do. I think it's something that God does in our heart. He changes our hearts so that we start to change the way we act around other people, the way we interact with other people, especially if they're different ethnically. It's interesting, a couple of years back I had a student, he took the course with me, and I asked him later, I said, you know, how have things changed for you? And he was saying how whenever he heard or watched on the news and there was something related to some ethnic culture or whatever, he no longer made the assumptions that he normally made in terms of stereotypes, but he would stop and ask himself, why are they behaving that way? What is the issue that's causing the conflict? And so he says, I've learned not to make assumptions about other ethnic groups. And that was a big deal for him. So the other piece is the fact that he's also in his 60s and he was able to change the way he thought about other ethnic cultures. There's a lot to be said. Again, you need to really pick up the book to really get the whole idea. But essentially, to pull it all together, understanding, which is knowledge CQ, plus going deep, which is interpretive CQ, combined with God-honoring motivation, perseverance CQ, leads to action, which is behavioral CQ. That's really the whole idea. So, five attitudes for you to consider as you think about leading or developing healthy multicultural small groups. You need to do an anthropological dig in your own soul. You need to ask yourself the question of what does culture mean to you? You need to root your view of the other in the Imago Dei. When you look at a person who may be a different ethnic group, different cultural group, social economic group, you know, do you view them as a person made in the image of God, or do you say that they're a homeless person living on the east side, and you know, that's all he or she is good for, is a druggie? that person's, you know, from India, he's gonna cheat me every second, every chance he's gonna get. On and on it goes. This morning, Phil Wagler challenged this idea of developing a kingdom culture. So another attitude: seek first the kingdom of God. What is God's kingdom on earth mean? How does God view His kingdom? Learn to live up close, and lastly, make a plan. If you're going to again be involved in multicultural ministry, it's not something that you just wake up one morning and decide you're going to do this. You actually have to really think about it, pray about it, make a plan on how you're going to do that. And so I refer to the very last page of your handout, and it's 24 practices that you can start to implement in your life today about how you can start to become a more multicultural person. Read, go to the movies, eat different foods, learn a new language. You know, nothing goes so far as to learning a few phrases in somebody else's culture, whether it's a hello or a greeting. You know, my church at the Life Center, we have 18 different nationalities. I've learned to pick up, I don't know, 5 or 6 different expressions. You know, so I can say to somebody from a Punjabi background, Sat Sri Akal, which is hello, goodbye. It's all one word that encompasses everything. You know, Spanish, hola, como está, you know, things like that. Apa kabar, kabar baik, you know. See, I can speak Malay, I can do that. You know, in Swahili, I can say jambo and habari yako. I think. Anyway, so I mean, you still work at it, but just even learning the little phrases will go a long way in developing and bridging cultures. Okay, so that's all the academic side. This is the case study side. So, as I mentioned, the Life Center is a multicultural church. It's in Abbotsford, which I know is kind of a strange place to have a multicultural church, because there's already, like, you know, a whole tons of churches in Abbotsford. But our church is unique, as I said, because we are in an intentionally intercultural church, in the sense that we desire to basically integrate all the nations in Abbotsford to worship one God under one roof. And so we have 18 different nationalities. Primarily, the groups are made up of Punjabi background, Caucasian, Mennonite, Dutch, German, Russian background, and Asians, and South Americans, and Africans. So we kind of have families from all these different countries. When it came to our small groups, one of the things that I learned very quickly is this concept of be organic, not organized. Here's the myth. The myth is we think that we can structure multicultural small groups. No, you can't. if you're wanting to do multicultural small groups, you're going to have to learn to flex a little bit. And these are why we have to learn to flex a little bit. When you bring together different multi-ethnic groups that bring, you know, their own cultural backgrounds, beliefs, and values, these are the four areas that we discovered that we had to learn to figure out how we're going to make this work. First of all, even though we had mostly second-generation people in our church, we also had first-generation immigrants as well. But again, even though some of our second-generation members had been born and raised in Canada, they still had their cultural beliefs and values from their parents and their grandparents. So one of the first things we dealt with was the idea of individualists and collectivists. We understand mostly that North American or Western society upholds an individualist mindset. and Asian countries, African countries, South American countries tend to have a collectivist mindset. What that really means is in the value of the person, how they value the person. So in Western societies, every person, every individual has value. They all have their gifts and talents, and there's this idea that the individual can move forward, can take care of their life, you know, that it's all about them. Collectivist says, well, actually, it's not so much about the individual. You're part of the group, but really, when one person succeeds, the entire group succeeds. You know, we talk about immigration, right? Collectivist cultures, or collectivist cultures. If somebody comes over to North America, chances are they're going to end up bringing the entire family over as well, because it's not just about them; it's about everybody else back home. So that's something we had to kind of figure out. How do we balance this individualist and collectivist? And honestly, one of the things we discovered was that collectivists, the people that came to the small groups from a collectivist background, you know, actually helped to build the relationship with the group, because there was this greater identity, understanding that it's a group thing, not just an individual thing. High context and low context. Basically, the value we place on our relationships. In a high context society, again, I'll use Asian background, we tend to be more relational, whereas low context is like what we have in North America, where again, or Canada, where basically, you know, we have our relationships, we connect with one another, but, you know, once the meeting is over, whatever, then, you know, we're done, that's it, you know. So again, how do we balance that? Authority, high power and low power distance. I used to be the pastor of this church. I'm not anymore, but I still attend. When I walk into church, guess what they still call me? I'm still Pastor Sherman, even though I'm no longer the pastor of the church. There's an automatic giving of authority, because you have the spiritual role as a spiritual leader, right? So understanding, okay, well, how do we bridge these gaps of high power and low power distance? Ambiguity and clarity. This one is probably the biggest one to biggest challenge, because again, some cultures have a real need for everything has to be clear, everything has to be spelled out, we start on time, we end on time, you know, whatever. Trust me, at my church, if we've come to the Life Center, our time says 10:30 start time. What time do you think we actually start at? 10:45! Anyways, so that's just something we had to learn to live with, that it's just never going to be. So in that way, we have to learn to be flexible with this idea of how do you bring in these different realities. And this is how we did it. Three main principles. A, embracing and integrating the nation is in the DNA of our church. That's just how we started. It was right from the beginning. Everybody gets integrated. Everybody gets embraced. We don't care if you come from a individualist, collectivist, high context, low context, whatever. We're going to bring it, we're going to accept it, we're going to work with it. Secondly, we said small groups is a key ministry of the church. This is very much a Bill Hybels saddleback idea. It's the third leg of our foundation for our church. It's worship, small groups, and relationships. That's really it. And then again, it's a Bill Hybels approach, incorporating the empty chair. This is a Willow Creek idea. And in our small groups, when we get together, there's always an empty chair. And we pray for whoever God brings. We're just going to embrace them and integrate them into our small groups. So, but what does that mean? We had to train our leaders to prepare for cross-cultural encounters. We had to encourage them to be engaged and immerse themselves in cross-cultural encounters. We taught the idea of realizing the power of love and generosity and sharing. One of the key things we do at the church level is every fourth Sunday we have a potluck right after service. I know that's probably common for some of us here. That's what we did. You take that and now you just transfer it to the small group setting, and that's what they do as well. They have the small groups, like the normal, what you would call normal small groups, but then we incorporate the sharing of the meals, doing having shared experiences. Because that's the one thing we learn. How do you bring together people from all walks of life, different countries, backgrounds, values? And if there's, and if all we have, well, not say all we have, but we all have the same faith, same shared faith in Christ, and that's all fine and good. That is, without that, you don't really can't do very much. But having that alone is not enough. You have to create shared experiences, and that's really what brings people together. Obviously, love and generosity as well. The last piece is incorporating global theologies. Curriculum was an issue because how do you go and take a Willow Creek curriculum and make that work in a multicultural small group? Some of the topics, some of the language, some of the references make no sense to people who, if they have no frame of reference, it just goes over their head. And so then what we decided was we would just... we would come up with a few curriculum, and then we would let the groups also pick their curriculums. But other things we want the groups to do is to learn to incorporate other cultural forms of Christian worship into their small group time. Again, if you came to our church, how we've integrated the cultures into our church worship service are things like our singing. We sing not just English songs, but we take the English songs and we translate them into different languages, the bridges and the choruses. When we do offering is not a basket that's passed around. Offering is we get up, we dance, we go to the front, and we give. You know what I mean? So it's things like that. That's how we do. So again, it's taking what happens at the church level and bring it into the small group time, you know? Encourage the nations to contribute to our understanding and interpretation of God's Word. One of the misbeliefs we have is that because Christianity has been taught by Western society for so long, that Western society has pretty much said all there is to say about Christianity. Well, obviously, with missionary work that's gone overseas, other nations now, who've also been Christians for many, many generations, have also developed their own theology, on scripture and practice. And so now, it's you need to encourage other nations, other people groups, other ethnic groups who have the faith, same faith, to share. Well, say in your culture, in Africa, how does this text explain? How do you live out this text? What does this mean to you? From an African point of view, or an Asian point of view, or a South American point of view. And then the last one is develop and incorporate an empathy and understanding of ethnicity, class, displacement, and beliefs into your group discussions. Basically, what we're talking about here is this. When we bring again together different ethnic groups into a small group, as I said at the very beginning, healthy small groups, healthy multicultural small groups begin with healthy, multicultural leaders, right? Like leaders who think multiculturally. And so when you bring them together, you need to look at them and say, okay, well, let's understand your ethnicity. Let's talk about the different classes, are they middle class, low income, when they came overseas to Canada, were they, a well-off, did they live well-off, but then when they came to Canada, they had to start all over again? I mean, those kinds of things affect how people perceive life and scripture. Displacement is probably the biggest one, and it's about this idea that again, going back to my earlier example, you know, if someone has moved over to immigrate to Canada, and you know, sometimes there's a loss. There's things they've left behind, maybe people or a career or something. We need to honor that, recognize that as we bring that into our group discussion. And of course, beliefs, right? Just different people will bring different beliefs and values, and to try to incorporate out, weed out, you know, stuff that align with the Bible, and then other things you kind of have to think through and say, well, is that really truly what the Bible says and how we ought to live? Because different cultural groups, ethnic cultural groups, like I said, may interpret certain texts a little differently. And so this gives you an opportunity to actually hear and learn how the rest of the world may interpret a text that may be very familiar to you in your context. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, I guess, are we done? It's 1 hour, right?
10 more minutes.
10 more minutes. Oh, sweet. Okay, I got 10 minutes. Shoot, you can ask me any questions. If you've heard anything here that's kind of jogged your thinking, what further explanation on? Any comments from our live stream?
Nope.
No. Yes.
How do you overcome the language barrier? Because if there is a multicultural community, then they use a different language.
Yeah.
Do you make sermon in different languages as well?
Yeah. Our church, we've decided to stay with English as the main main language for communication, because most of our members are second generation or more. However, in the past, where we've had guest speakers or other people who preach in a different language, we just translate it. That's how we do that. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, that is one that we, whether I say thankfully or not, but that's what happened for our church, is that most of our members can speak English, and you know, I mean, it doesn't mean that how do I say this? You know, if we had someone whose English really wasn't that great, that we wouldn't include them. I think we would still, you know, if anything, by being in an English-speaking group, it probably will help that person to develop their language, the English language skill. So, yeah. Does that help?
Maybe yeah? Just to add to that, in our church, we have simultaneous. So the main service is in English, but we have simultaneous Japanese and Spanish translation of the message as the message is being presented.
Also, some churches provide English teaching ESL program.
Yep.
So just to help. So there are many different ways to overcome the language barrier.
Yeah, but at some point you kind of have to pick one as your majority language to be the main communication mode, right? Yeah.
There's a Spanish-speaking church in Surrey, but they call themselves multicultural, but their main language is Spanish.
Okay.
So it's a very interesting setup.
Yeah. Are they outreaching and trying to integrate other ethnic groups?
Like their view is that in Latin America there's many
yes.
Culture.
Yeah.
But they call themselves a multicultural church.
Yeah, and that's one definition of it as well. I've actually heard of that, where if a certain church has different, how do I say this? There's obviously different regions in the world, right? You know, we've got North America, South America, Europe, Africa, and Asia. But if all the people group come from one particular region, even though they may speak the same language, they may not necessarily share the same culture. They may have the same ethnicity, but they may not have the same cultural beliefs and values. So in one hand, yeah, I would agree that that's a multicultural church. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I agree with that. Eventually, we have to stick with one language. I think that should be English. Not because I'm here, because in my background, I am forced to immigrate into Canada. I didn't want to come to Canada, but I think God led me into here.
Yeah.
Since I'm here, I have to adopt the system in Canada, or Canadian history has to be part of my heritage.
Yep.
Even though I'm not born here.
Yep.
And also, I'm trying very hard to incorporate into Canadian society, even though I am forced to be here. And in the same way, if they choose to come here, then they chose the land.
Yes.
It is not only the land, it's whole package.
Yes.
Language is included.
That's right.
And some of the food then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I agree with that, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the whole idea of cultural assimilation, right? I totally agree with you. One of the things that can happen with immigrant groups is that ghettos can be set up. Ethnic ghettos can be set up, like Chinese Chinatown or Korean town or something like that. Well, people can immigrate and they go into these towns. Into these areas, and they never have to learn to speak English, never have to acclimatize or assimilate into the greater society, but you know, live 15 years or more in these areas. But then again, so then our question is, though, I mean, bringing it back to this topic at hand here, why is it that they didn't, you know, why is it that they didn't move into or assimilate into greater Canadian society? Was it a language barrier? Was it a cultural barrier? Do we, as a church community, do we have a responsibility to try and incorporate and integrate and accept and assimilate immigrants into our churches?
You talk about multicultural churches, and in one of your slides you mentioned about ethnicity.
Yeah.
Now, an evaluation was done on our church, and we're turned to be a multi-ethnic and multicultural church. So I'm struggling right now when you have like ethnicity as part of a subset of being multicultural, and based on the evaluation that was done on our church, you were termed to be a multi-ethnic and multicultural church. So can you comment on that or give your views?
Yeah, no, as I said before, the word culture is so used so broadly that it really encompasses more than just, you know, what perhaps we have in our general understanding of what culture is, which can be anything, which can be food, culture, values, beliefs, customs, traditions, ethnicity. Some of the research I've done, they use multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-racial, all as the same thing. That evaluation is probably a good way to describe. They're trying to separate ethnicity from culture, I think. And in one sense, I do agree with that, because ethnicity is often tied in with things like your race, your ethnic background, you know, Chinese, European, Filipino, African, whatever. And culture is more along the lines of customs and values and beliefs. Yeah, I think that's a good way of describing it. I think that's good. Yeah, I could probably change that on my slide as well, that it can be actually two different things. But like I said, some of the research lumps it all together as well. Sorry, go ahead.
This is related with this question, kind of like big question. Does it mean that the population of a church is a multi-ethnic? Can that be called a multicultural church?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, if your church is, what's it, Filipino, Japanese, and no?
More.
It's more?
More. So we have number of ethnic backgrounds.
Okay.
And it's, but the major ones that have the ability to translate the sermon.
Yeah.
Is in Japanese.
Japanese and.
But we have some Taiwanese, we have some Chinese, we have some Malaysian, we have Ukrainian, we have South African, like there's a wide variety of ethnic backgrounds.
Yeah. One of the. I wish I could go into it here, but essentially, it's this idea of developing. This is the way I've actually explained it sometimes. An ethnic group may bring into a situation their cultural beliefs and values. And then when we have our faith, the idea is that we want to be able to develop a Christ culture. So one cultural ethic, one way of living life, one agreed upon set of values that are based on Christ's ethic. You know what I'm trying to say? So if I could draw a picture, essentially, you know, you've got Christ culture, you've got your ethnicity, and the idea is that when that is brought into a community, you're not trying to basically wipe out somebody else's beliefs and values. You incorporate them, but then you still have this larger Christ culture that basically covers all. You know, does that make sense? Am I losing you?
But because these are big words, like you can say Christ-like culture, which is like a given.
Yeah.
And like that's like the goal, right? But we're faced with different ethnic backgrounds. We're faced with different cultures. So like, I think the goal here is like, how do we? It's very complex.
It is complex.
How do we break this down into more sizable chunks that we can bite off easily and work at it, so that we work towards.
Commonality,
yeah.
I think. Well, I mean, okay. I need a board. Okay. I think this will. Can you turn this off?
Yeah.
Because
the other side.
Okay. This really, I think, will help.
This might be better because the camera's on.
Yeah.
It'll blank out your screen.
Oh.
Just hit B.
Yeah, B.
Okay. Hey, awesome. Okay, alright. So what you're trying to say is how do you integrate, is actually how you integrate the groups, is that what you're trying to say?
Because like there's so much ethnicity, there's
okay.
So much.
This is a graph.
Like how to.
Okay. So like I said, this is a bigger piece than, like this is normally what I teach in my course, okay? That's why it's a little bit, I couldn't put everything in there. Okay, so essentially, to really start to pull all this together, the four pieces of the cultural intelligence is the knowledge CQ, your interpretive CQ, your perseverance CQ and your behavioral CQ. This is questions that you need to ask at the leadership level and at the personal level. Okay? And so these are the four components of developing and growing your cultural intelligence. But as I said, growing your cultural intelligence is really step two. The first one is actually having a theological view of God's heart for the nation. Okay? Because this is the main thing. If you don't have this, if you don't have a theological understanding, the other points really make no sense. Right? And that's why when we talk about what's happening now in Canada and the multicultural issues that we're faced, they're trying to solve the multicultural conflicts with a social and an economic answer. But it's not a social and economic answer. It's actually a theological answer based on the first belief that we're all made in the image of God. If you don't believe somebody's made in the image of God and therefore has worth, then basically then all the other pieces fall away, because then you start to bring into it assumptions that you have made or have been taught by your family or your greater culture about a specific ethnic group. Okay? The third part, as I said then, is talking about organic versus organized. Okay, so really what we're having here is the four pieces of the construct that help you to define trying to define culture. And there's really four things that you want to think about if you're trying to define culture. You define culture by ethnicity, you define culture by class, displacement, and then beliefs. And that's the four areas I talked about earlier. Once you start to understand once you start to understand someone's culture based on the ethnicity, displacement, beliefs, and class, then these areas here, what you learn about yourself, what you learn about others, then help you to then develop a Christ culture for your church or small group. Does that make more sense now?
Yeah.
There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah. What was the fourth point? Oh yeah. What was the fourth point? My brain has shot now. Oh yeah, incorporating global theologies, because if we don't start to think about how other people develop their theologies on God, you know, you can't really have a fuller sense of Christ culture. Okay? Does that make sense?
I have one last question.
Yeah.
It's just one simple question. In connection with being organic and not organized, and in your small group, there is one person who speaks another language. Does it mean that he can speak by his own language in that certain group? Or do you know how you can handle it?
Yeah, I mean, if they speak a language that nobody else understands, that doesn't really help to build your community, right? If they're going to speak in a different language, then you kind of have to ask them to could you translate it for us? And I know what you're talking about, because there's an aspect of cultural intelligence where we use the term heart language. Where it's a language of your heart that you either grew up with or is the most comfortable for you. And sometimes...
Vernacular.
It's the language you're most comfortable with, and so then sometimes in group discussions, they won't have a word for it. Like I know my African brothers and sisters, sometimes they can't express it in English, so they express it in Swahili, right? And you just let them say it, and then you say, well, help us understand as best as you can what that means. So in a way, you're allowing them to express their identity, their culture, but then you're also asking, well, help us to understand. And I think that's one of the key things towards cultural intelligence. or growing your cultural intelligence, it's this three key words: help me understand.
Help
me understand.
That's it.
That's really all it is. Help me understand. And it really will go a long way. Okay, last question.
Last question. Do you have a working definition or even technical definition of a multicultural church?
That's what my dissertation is going to be on.
Because
I don't have one yet.
Like, you know, as opposed to a church with many ethnic churches around.
Yeah.
They're not assimilated, they're not integrated.
Yeah.
So do you call that a multicultural church? Or, as I've said, you know, is there any or working definition that you have encountered?
Not yet. I don't think anybody's able to nail this one down.
Because I think Dimas has a simple kind of a definition that at least the majority culture is at least 25%.
Okay.
So, but this is very broad.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure if that's very helpful, but that's why I'm asking.
You know, I don't know. That's so, like I said, because everybody, here's the thing, it's that word, it's that word culture. It means so many things to so many people. And until there's a clear understanding of what the word means, this is going to be because like I said, culture can mean anything: ethnicity, values, food, movies, anything, really. So, anyway, hey, thanks guys for being here, and thanks for sticking it with me till 4:40. All right, now you can go home and rest, and hopefully you have church tomorrow if it doesn't snow.
Yeah, can I collect all your name tags so that we can reuse them?
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Sherman, I have one question
online.
You can respond to that.
Okay. What's the online? Oh, am I one to speak or am I?
Yeah, sure.
Type?
You can speak here.
Okay. What's the question?
So it's Lawrence asking. In his church, they have three languages group, congregation in one church. So do you think it's better to have small groups in each of the languages or try to make groups multicultural?
Wow. Okay. I think it's going to be. That's a larger church issue. I think you have to know what is the DNA of the church. If the church wants to have multiple congregations, then have the three different small groups. But if the church wants to move to a trajectory of trying to bring the different groups together, then yeah, you want to start to bring the different language groups and see what happens. To be honest, it's not a science. There's no perfect science. You gotta try it and see what happens. Yeah. So I don't know if that helps or not, but yeah.
Hey, thank you.
Can I take a picture?
Yes, go ahead and take a picture. Oh, sorry.
Hey.
Oops. Oh. Yeah. That's it. There's gotta be a way to turn this. Oh, fine. Okay. There.
It's still blue screen.
Okay. Where's the on off thing?
He's gonna take a picture of it.
Oh, I see.